nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you, Mark, for this very kind introduction. What we are going to do is, as Mark already told you, we are going to talk about the high-frequency application of carbon nanotube transistors. This is a quite large topic, and that's why I got the chance to split this presentation into two talks. Today I will talk about the fabrication, characterization, and the compact model of these kinds of transistors. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about the multi-scale simulation framework we are trying to develop in our Center for Advancing Electronics Dresden. Let me start my presentation with two claims about CNT FETs. So, analog high-frequency applications are the most suitable entry point for CNT FETs. And the second claim is that device linearity, this is a very special property of CNT FETs, is most valuable for analog high-frequency applications. During my talk today, I'm going to moderate these two claims. I will give you some examples and explanations that you can understand these two claims about CNT FETs. Closely related to these two claims are the following two challenges. We have to make sure that we can provide access to these intrinsic material properties in fabricated devices, and we have to make sure that the CNT FETs we are going to build can be utilized in applications. So the main idea of our cluster is, of our center is, to come from the materials to very simple transistors, to more sophisticated transistors, high-frequency transistors, and circuits and systems. I would like to discuss with you many, many different topics, but it's not a good idea to put everything within 45 minutes. So I decided to present only selected topics, but I have prepared some more topics for further offline discussions after my presentation, if you're interested in. What I really like to cover is the following. I would like to motivate why should I use CNT FETs for analog high-frequency applications. I want to discuss with you the challenges in designing and manufacturing CNT FETs. I would like to give you an overview of the current status of the CNT FET technology for high-frequency applications. I would really like to show you the applicability of our compact model CCAM for CNT FETs. So you always need a compact model if you want to build circuits and systems with the technology. And if I have time, I will give you some more details about some benchmark circuit design studies we have done so far. As a backup and for our offline discussions, we can talk about trap-induced apparent linearity of CNT FETs. We can discuss intensively why current physics-based compact models fail to predict the behavior of the CNT FETs correctly. I can give you some more further details about the application of CCAM for analog and digital applications, or we can also discuss CNT FET manufacturing challenges, and we can discuss the pros and cons for different manufacturing methods for CNT FETs. Now it's time to start with my real presentation, and let's talk about the device linearity. I mentioned this word linearity several times before, but now it's time to explain you what I mean with device linearity. Let's have a look at these sketches. On the left-hand side, we see the transfer characteristic, and on the right-hand side, the related transconductance. I sketched the transfer characteristic in such a way that in a certain bias region, we have a linear relationship between the drain current and the gate wall. And if we see that a transistor has such a linear relationship between the output current and the input voltage, we say that this device is linear. Sometimes it's very difficult to decide by visual inspection alone if a transistor is linear or not. That's the reason why we also have a look at the transconductance, so the derivative of the current. And if you have a linear relationship in the transfer characteristic, we have a flat transconductance in the same bias region. On the next slide, I'm going to explain you why we claim that this device linearity is essential in communication systems. One very typical communication system is a cell phone, an iPhone, for example. And to understand what I'm going to explain you, we have to deassemble the iPhone, we have to look inside the iPhone, and if we do this, we can find many different components. And one of the most important components in an iPhone is a circuit board. And this is shown here. This is the circuit board of an iPhone 5. We find many different electronic components there. We find the digital processor, we find the memory, we find the power management unit there. But we have also one part which is called the RF front end, which many different analog modules which we need for the communication. So, if you, for example, if you talk to somebody with your cell phone, if you download videos and you watch the videos, and if you send your photos to the cloud, all the data has to go through this RF front end. The challenge is that the customers, so you want to have higher volume to be transmitted, and this transmission must be very, very fast. And this is very challenging for the electronic components we have at our front end. It's very challenging in terms of the spectral efficiency and the transmission speed, because both are limited by the signal distortion of the electronic components we have here and by the battery lifetime. Because you have a handheld telephone, and if we want to send a lot of data and it's very fast, you need a lot of power. Let's have a look at this pie chart here, where I have visualized a typical breakdown of the power consumption of a handheld telephone. So we see that 1/3 of the power is consumed in the processor. 1/4 is consumed in the screen, but almost half of the power is consumed in the RF front end. So if we want to meet the expectations by the customers for higher volume and high speed data transmission, we have to do something. If you want to do it with our handheld telephone. So our claim is now that the device linearity could help to meet the future communication demands, that we are able to reduce the amount of power we need at our front end. To understand this better, let's have a look at this very simplified pictures. Assume that we want to, or that we feed in a sinusoidal signal into the gate of a transistor. If you have a look at the Fourier transformation of this signal, you see a single peak in the frequency spectrum. In the first step, let's assume that we feed this signal into a transistor which has a nonlinear relationship between the output current and input voltage. And if we do so, we see that the output current is distorted. So the signal we feed in is distorted. And if we make a Fourier decomposition of the signal, we see that we not only get the peak we want to have, we also get harmonics at higher frequencies, which is very bad because power is lost to these harmonics. And this is not what we want to have. If we use instead a virtual CNT FET technology, which gives us a linear relationship between the output current and the input voltage, we see that the signal is amplified without any distortion, and we get in the Fourier transformation only one single peak, and this is in fact what we want to have. All the power is now within this single peak and not in the harmonics. Let me summarize these findings on the next slide, on this slide here. So if you use a classical, conventional semiconductor technology like silicon MOSFETs, and we have a nonlinear relationship in the output in the transfer characteristic, the signals will get distorted. Due to the harmonics we have, we will get interferences with other channels. So we need expensive filters to get rid of these harmonics. And we have higher losses and higher power consumption, as I already explained on the last slide. If you use instead our virtual CNT FET technology, which has a linear relationship between the output current and the input voltage, we get pure signals, which allows for higher data rates. We get simpler systems, so we can reduce the costs of the chip, And we get the lower power consumption and thus a longer battery lifetime. And the claim is now that if we can exploit the linearity in such a system, we are able to reduce significantly the amount of power we need for the RF front end. So altogether, we can say that distortion, or the other way around, the device linearity is a major issue in mobile communication. And that's the target of our cluster, to work on this, to make it possible to exploit the device linearity for these kind of systems. If you want to exploit this linearity, we have to talk about the fabrication and the design of these kind of transistors. Because one of the main challenges we are faced with is how to obtain and provide access to the unique intrinsic properties like the linearity of the CNT FETs and how to use them for applications. Let's have a look on this. In general, the transistor properties are affected by different subjects. First of all, transistor properties depend significantly on the intrinsic properties of the semiconductor material you use as a channel material. So in our case, it's a CNT FET. It's a CNT. Then we have to talk about the channel morphology. We have to discuss the device architecture itself. And we also have to discuss, and this is very important in nanoelectronics, we have to discuss the interface properties also. Let's start with the intrinsic property of CNTs. I think that most of you are very well familiar with the properties of CNTs, but nevertheless, let me summarize the main important, the most important properties here on this slide. So if you have a look at the CNTs itself, they can have different band gaps depending on the crystal structure of the CNT itself, depending on the chirality. So you can get metallic tubes and you can get semiconducting tubes with different band gaps. So typically band gaps are in between 0 and 1.2 electron volts. Typical diameters you have for CNTs are in between 0.5 and 3 nanometer. So this is really, really small diameter. And all the electrons which are flowing through the CNT have to go through this very small material. So in this case, we really have a one-dimensional transport. All the electrons have to flow in one direction. They have no chance to go into another direction because it's a very small material of only 1 nanometer, 2 nanometers. And this one-dimensional transport gives us some very good electronic properties we can exploit. So for example, the first and easiest obvious one is that we have a low scattering probability if we have one-dimensional transport. The other one is the device linearity, which is also closely related to the one-dimensional transport. I'm going to talk about this tomorrow in much more details. What else? A single CNT can carry up to 25 microamp, roughly, which is relatively high if you compare to the very small diameter you have of such a tube. We have very low intrinsic capacitances in the range of 1 attofarad. And due to the band structure of the CNT, we can get carry velocities up to the Fermi velocity of graphene, which is really high. And if we have a look at all these different properties, and if we summarize them, we see that there's really a high potential for high-frequency applications with a significantly reduced signal distortion. Now we have to talk about the other subject, the channel morphology. So I distinguish roughly between three different morphologies. It's a single tube channel, where we have only one single tube in the channel. It's a multi-tube channel, where we have well-aligned CNTs in parallel in the channel. And it's a thin film channel, where we have more like a chaotic network of the CNTs lying on the substrate. Depending on the method you use to fabricate these kind of transistors, you get a single tube channel, a multi-tube channel, or a thin film transistor. I will focus on three different fabrication methods. So you can use CVD, chemical vapor deposition, to directly grow your CNTs where you want to have them on a wafer. You can use dielectric phoresis, DEP, to deposit the CNTs where you want to have them. In this case, you can use pre-sorted CNTs. Or you can use a polymer transfer technique to transfer pre-grown CNTs from one substrate to another substrate. Depending on the method you use to manufacture your device, you are faced with different challenges. First of all, let's have a look at the DEP method, dielectric freezes method. In the dielectric freezes method, you try to put the CNTs from a solution onto the substrate. And here we have to deal with the tube placement and the tube pre-sorting. What we want to have is, for a semiconductor device, we only want to have semiconducting tubes in a channel. But as I told you before, depending on the quality, depending on the crystal structure, we can also get metallic tubes, which is not good if you want to build a transistor out of it. So we have to pre-sort the sample. We have to get rid of the metallic tubes. But now we have to consider the channel lengths we have. For example, if we restrict it to a channel length of 800 nanometer due to the lithography we have, we need CNTs which are much longer than 800 nanometer. They must be 1.2 micrometer, for example. But if you want to pre-sort these CNTs, you have to treat them by ultrasonic. And if you treat CNTs with ultrasonic, you break these CNTs. You put defects into the CNTs, which is not good. So you have to develop smooth sorting techniques to get long pre-sorted CNTs. If you talk about CVD, we have to talk about the catalysts. This is a major issue also, because the good point is you can directly grow the CNTs with CVD where you want to have them. But then you have to make sure that only semiconducting tubes are growing, and this is really difficult. For this, you have to find special catalysts for selective tube growth. The other point is on which substrate you grow the CNTs. If you grow the CNTs on silicon oxide, for example, you get a chaotic network. If you grow CNTs by CVD on quartz, you get well-aligned CNTs. And this is the reason why some groups decided to grow the CNTs on quartz and then to use a polymer transfer technique to put them onto a silicon oxide substrate, because this is much easier to handle. If you want to build a transistor out of it, you have to move the transistors from quartz to a silicon substrate. But if you use a polymer to transfer these CNTs, you get some contamination. You get dirt on the CNTs, which is really bad because you cannot get rid of these dirt on a CNT. And if you have dirt, you have traps. If you have traps, you get hysteresis in the transfer characteristic of your transistor, which is what you do not want to have. Sincerely, I do not have time to go into much more details about these fabrication methods, but we can discuss offline the different aspects of these methods. In general, the channel morphology determines the channel resistance and the current drive we have and thus the application. Let's have a look at a single tube channel. In a single tube channel, we have one single CNT. That means we have 25 microamp. What can you do with 25 microamp? Nothing. You can build maybe a digital circuit, but that's it. If you are interested in analog high frequency applications, you need a lot of current drive. So you have to put many CNTs in parallel to get milliwatt output power. And if you have a look at a thin film transistor, it's really, really difficult. They are relatively easy to fabricate, but due to the chain of CNTs you have, so the electrons have to move from one CNT to another CNT to another CNT to bridge the gap between source and drain. So in this case, you get a very high channel resistance. And if you have a very high channel resistance, you cannot build high frequency applications. So thin film transistors are interesting for sensor applications, maybe. In my point of view. Next subject is device architecture. So I divide roughly a device architecture into three different versions. So we can have a global backgate CNT FET, which is relatively easy to fabricate. We have a top gate CNT FET, and we can also have a local backgate CNT FET. In general, the electrode design and device structure itself determine the gate control and important for high frequency application, the parasitics. Because in between the different metals you have, you always have parasitic capacitances. And we have to reduce them to allow high frequency operation of these types of transistors. The type of architecture you choose depends on the equipment you have in the lab. If you want to build a global backgate transistor, this is relatively easy and can be done in almost all labs. But if you are going to build local backgate transistors where the gate is buried into the substrate, this is very challenging. You need a lot of equipment, knowledge, and process modules to do this. Since we are interested in analog high-frequency applications, we have a look at our center, at the top gate CNT FETs and the local backgate CNT FETs. The last subject we have to deal with in designing and fabricating CNT FETs are the interface properties. And two main interface properties I have put here on the slide. First of all, let's have a look at the right plot. Here we see a typical transfer characteristic of a multi-tube CNT FET, and we see if we make a forward sweep and a backward sweep, and if we plot the current in the same figure, we see a window in between them, a gap, and this is called hysteresis, which is not good. Because if you bias the transistor in one point, over time, the bias point will change, and with such a technology, you are not able to build circuits out of it. And this hysteresis is due to traps you have, due to a bad quality oxide, or if you have dirt on the CNT. The other very challenging issue is the contact resistance, or the contact properties. This is data from Franklin from IBM. He shows the contact resistance over embedding length. So what is embedding length? You have your contact, you have your CNT, and the length the CNT is into the metal is called the embedding length. And if you decrease this embedding length, you see that your contact resistance goes up. And what else do we see? That depending on the metal we use for contacting the CNT, we get different contact properties, let me call it like this. And we will see, especially tomorrow, that the contact and the properties of the contact significantly impacts or affects the device behavior. So these were some general ideas about designing and manufacturing of CNT FETs. Now let's have a look at the current status of this technology for high-frequency applications. As I told you, we are interested in analog high-frequency applications. We need a lot of current drive, we need a lot of output power. That's why we are interested in multi-tube CNT FETs. Here's a typical SEM picture, scanning electron microscopy picture of such a multi-tube, multi-finger transistor. What do we see? We see the white lines coming from the top to the bottom, and these are the gate fingers. We have a lot of them in parallel. We have gray lines. These are the source and drain fingers, so we have a lot of them. And the white lines coming from the left to the right are the CNTs. It looks like that we have a chaotic network, so similar to a thin film transistor. But this is not the case here. Because the CNTs we have here are long enough to bridge the gap between source and drain. So that's why it's not a thin film transistor. If you are interested in to build analog applications, you need around milliwatt output power. And you can get milliwatt output power of a transistor if you have 1,000 to 3,000 parallel tubes in the channel of your transistor. Ah, by the way, these transistors, these CNTs are grown by a CVD method here. That's why we have a chaotic-like network. The good point is, if you are talking about analog applications, this footprint does not play any role. We do not have to scale it down to very small dimensions, like for digital applications, where size really matters. In this case, for analog applications, we don't care about the size of the transistor, because we need a lot of CNTs. So the dimensions of such a transistor will be 40 micrometer by 40 micrometer roughly. And the channel length for this transistor type is about 800 nanometers. This is due to the lithography we have in our labs. The next issue is that in this case, we have a lot of parasitic metal tubes in the channel of about 20 to 30%. Because at the moment these transistors were fabricated, we didn't have control about the catalysts. So we are not able to selectively grow only semiconducting tubes. That's the reason why you have so many metallic tubes in the channel. But also we have so many metallic tubes in the channel, we have a first prototype technology which delivers quite nice values for the peak transit frequency. It's about 10 gigahertz. It's the extrinsic value, not the intrinsic value you find sometimes in literature. It's the extrinsic value, so we de-embedded nothing except for the pads. And we have an output power gain of more than 10 dB. The bad message is that so far we were not able to experimentally verify that we have a good device linearity. And to my knowledge, there's no group worldwide which has shown that these transistors provide a good device linearity. But we are working on this, and tomorrow I will give you some more details about how we can achieve device linearity in zinc TFETs.
So, do you mean from the DC IV curves they don't look linear, or you haven't done a
pulsed
microwave?
Yeah, from pulse measurements. Sometimes, it's a good point. It's one of my backup topics. You can see sometimes linearity in these transistors, but this is caused by the characterization method you use. You can only verify it if you use pulse measurements. What else can I see about our technology we have? So all the transistors are fabricated on a 4-inch wafer. So we have many different dies on it. On each die, we have different test structures for single-tube CNT FETs, for multi-tube, multi-finger CNT FETs. And we have transistors in a GSG configuration, which allows us to characterize the high-frequency properties of these transistors. Now, let's have a look at the characteristics. On the left part of the slide, we see typical single-tube characteristics. Here, it's a transfer characteristic where you have a current of 20 microamp, roughly, 25 microamp. And we see we can switch off the device nicely. Here, it's the output characteristic. We see a saturation of the current. This is quite good. But if you now have a look at the multi-tube characteristic shown on your right-hand side, what do we see? In a transfer characteristic, we are not able to switch off the device due to the high number of metallic tubes we have in the channel. And also in the output characteristic shown here, we see the impact of the metallic tubes. So we get no saturation of the current, which is really bad, yes?
What contacts did you use here?
Contacts? Palladium contacts.
And
you
get an impact?
Yes. Yes.
So why is that?
Because they are somehow functionalized, the CNTs.
The palladium or the CVD?
No, the CNT itself, okay. In the channel. It's due to the oxide we are using in this process.
That's the back gate, local back gate?
No, this is a top gate.
Top gate.
Now let's have a look at some AC characteristics. So AC characteristics, if you are interested in the high frequency characteristics of a transistors, you can only have a look at multi-tube transistors because you have to measure them with the 50 ohm equipment. And a single tube CNT FET has such a high impedance that you are unable to measure it with a standard equipment for high frequency characterization. So here you see only the characteristics of a multi-tube transistor. In the transit frequency, extrinsic values, we see that this transistor have roughly 7 gigahertz, and the maximum oscillation frequency is also about 7 gigahertz. The transistor also have some maximum available gain of about 8 dB. And here, in this plot, the intrinsic voltage gain, here we see the impact of the metallic tubes. The intrinsic voltage gain is only about 2.2, which is really, really low. And if you have in mind that most of the circuit topologies you can find, they are built or designed in such a way that they exploit the intrinsic voltage gain. This must be very, very high in typical circuit topologies. If you have metallic tubes, the intrinsic voltage gain is really low. And this limits also the available output power. But one of our partners built the first CNT-based single-stage L-band RF amplifier out of it. So this is the circuit. Here are the transistors with a feedback network and a matching network also. And by carefully designing the transistor and the circuit, they were able to show 11 dB linear gain at 1.3 GHz. Here we see some experimental data, S-parameters of a frequency compared to the model we have. I'm going to talk about this in a minute. I hope that the data I have shown you, not convinced you, but gave you an idea why we want to use these CNT FETs for analog high-frequency applications. The technology is there. We have to work on the metallic tubes, we know this, and we are working hardly on this to get rid of the metallic tubes. That's not an easy task. And but we can build right now analog applications with this kind of transistor. Nobody asked me how can I build a circuit out of a transistor which cannot be switched off. So, but if you have a look at analog applications, you do not have to switch off the transistor. If you use, for example, these transistors for small signal amplification, for a low noise amplifier, you bias a transistor in one single bias point, and you do not have to switch off this transistor. So you do not have to get rid of the metallic tubes. That's why we are able to build right now analog applications out of it. And the other point I want to mention is the device linearity is most valuable for analog high-frequency applications, but so far, nobody was able to experimentally verify it. That's why we need something with which we can project the performance of a circuit when we can get rid of metallic tubes. What happens with the properties, with the performance of a circuit, if we can get rid of the metallic tubes? And this can be done by a compact model. And this will be the last part of my presentation. I will give you some more details about the compact model we have for designing these circuits. This is a compact model which was developed and which is developing for high-frequency CNT FETs. Before, I want to give you some general ideas for what do I need a compact model, because I don't know if everybody is familiar with compact models. So, what's the purpose of a compact model? A compact model allows circuit design, circuit simulation, and if you have a good one, also optimization for an existing technology. So you have seen the electrical characteristics of the CNT FET technology, and the model must be able to capture these properties, these characteristics. This is what I mean with existing technology. Then by the help of the compact model, we can try to understand the circuit properties and how they are related to the technology. So we can play with the metallic tube fraction and see how does it affect the circuit properties. This is what we can do, is we can do prediction and extrapolation of the circuit and system properties for future technology nodes. So far we are limited to 800 nanometer channel lengths, but maybe in 2 years we have new equipment, we can build a 100 nanometer long CNTs, but we want to know in advance if it's really beneficial for the circuit applications we have in mind. This can be done with a well-designed compact model also. And it gives some nice feedback for the technology development because we see which technology parameters must be improved to boost the circuit performance. What about the state-of-the-art and compact models for CNTFETs? So most compact models you can find in literature are designed for digital applications, so for beyond CMOS applications. And they are restricted to nanoscale channel lengths. In our case, we have 800 nanometer long channels. So we need a different type of model. Most of the models you can find are restricted to single tube CNTFETs and low voltages. If you are talking about analog applications, we have to talk about high voltages because we need power to drive the antenna of our mobile phone. Most of the formulations you can find are focusing on describing the DC behavior alone, not the AC behavior. But if you're interested in high frequency application, you have to know the AC capability of your transistor. You have to predict it, also for circuit design. And the most severe issue is that almost no model which you can find is verified by experimental data. There's a lot of experimental data available in the literature, and we have our own transistors. But if you have a look at the compact models which are available so far, you find that they are not experimentally verified. So you see, there's only a little emphasis on multi-tube high-frequency analog applications. We have to do something, and we did something. We developed our own model for multi-tube high-frequency transistors. If you want to build a model, a compact model for multi-tube transistors, where we have semiconducting tubes and metallic tubes in the channel, where we have a lot of gate fingers and parasitics, we need an equivalent circuit which describes the behavior of the semiconducting tubes, this red one. We need a sub-circuit describing the metallic tubes, and we need a sub-circuit surrounding these two different types of tubes for describing the parasitics. What else do we have to consider? In all fabricated CNTFETs, you have Schottky-like barriers between the metal contact and the CNT. You will never get an ohmic-like contacted CNT. It's almost impossible to get it. So that's why we have to deal with Schottky barriers. The problem is, the challenge is, that compact modeling and the modeling itself of Schottky barriers is really, really complicated. And so far, there is no feasible physics-based model available which takes into account the Schottky barriers for the calculation of the current and the charge. So this is the reason why almost all existing compact models do not consider the Schottky barriers properly if you compare them with experiments. So this was another reason why we decided to develop our own compact models. And in my group, we have two different models. We have a semi-physics-based compact model called CCAM, and we have a physics-based compact model called TCAM. I'm only going to focus on CCAM in this presentation here. What is CCAM? CCAM is a semi-physical large signal compact carbon nanotube FET model for analog high-frequency applications. What are the features of this model? This is important for the circuit designers. I hope that some circuit designers are in this room here. So, we have bias-dependent formulations for all internal elements. It's a large signal model. So you can use this model in cadence to perform a periodic static state analysis, or you can use this model in ADS to perform a harmonic balance simulation to get into the details of the circuit and harmonics and the distortion of your circuit, for example. All equivalent circuit elements have a temperature dependence and geometry dependence. because we have to scale the dimensions, we have to change the layout of the transistor, because we have to change the gate width, we have to change the number of tubes to adjust the current level to the current level we need in our circuit. We have access to technology parameters like the fraction of the metallic tubes. With this, you can make some projections. What happens if you can reduce the number of metallic tubes? We have a noise model included, which is important for low noise amplifiers. And we also have a trap model. Because until now, all transistors or transistor technologies, which you can find on the market or in the literature, you have to deal with traps. And as I told you before, if you have traps in your transistor, you bias your transistor, and after 1 minute, the bias point is not here, the bias point is here. And for small cycle applications, you see, you will get totally different behavior. And this must be captured by the model, and this can be done with a trap model we have implemented in our CCAM. CCAM is not only available in MATLAB, it's also available in VeroDAC-R, which makes it possible to make 30 design studies with Cadence, ADS, and all the other different commercial simulators which are available so far. And the other point I want to mention is that we make use of the HiCAM infrastructure for developing and maintaining industry standard models for our model here. I don't know if you know HiCAM. HiCAM is an industry standard model for HBTs, for heterojunction bipolar transistors. And it's developed and maintained by Professor Schröder. He is hosting me in Dresden. And we can make use of his infrastructure and make profit out of it for the CCAM model we have. Did you have a small idea about the equations which are within CCAM? I have shown you here three equations describing the current. You see, it's not physics-based. It's empirical-based to the Schottky barriers we have. But this gives us the chance to not model only the DC characteristics, which are shown here, which I have shown you here for single-tube transistors and multi-tube transistors. So the line is always the model, and the symbols are the data, the external data we have. With CCAM, we are also able to fit nicely the AC characteristics. So we have a good agreement for the transect frequency, for the maximum frequency of oscillation. And as I told you before, it's also important for the circuit designers that you provide a model with which you can change the layout of the transistor. And this is shown here. So the circles are the experimental data, the crosses are the model, and you see for different gate widths and channel finger numbers, you get a nice agreement between the predictions of our model and the experimental data for the transconductance and the peak transit frequency shown here.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So are the source and drain extensions are doped or not?
No, they are not intentionally doped.
So the transistor is based on modulating the Schottky barrier width?
Yes.
Instead of modulating
the channel.
Barrier,
yes.
Of the
yes. Yes, yes, yes. So this is the main working principle of the transistor. This was shown here on this slide. This is a typical, very simplified band diagram of a transistor. You have the Schottky barrier here between the metal and the channel. And by changing the gate voltage, you change the width of the Schottky barrier. And thus you control the current flowing through the transistor.
In the SCM, which one is the source, which one is the gate?
Yeah, this is source, this is the drain, this is the CNT bridging source and drain. And this is the gate on top of it. This is the top gate configuration.
Following up his question, how these two segments of...
They are not doped.
They are not doped.
They are electrostatically controlled by the top gate. You have friction fields from the side walls of the gate, and they are controlling the conduction band here in these spacer regions.
What's the distance?
200 nanometers. This is about 200 nanometers, 400, or in this case, it's a little bit different. So it's 300, 300, 300, roughly.
So is that a design challenge to lower that gap? Because
No, if you the problem is if you lower this gap, if you decrease the distance between the source and the gate, you increase the parasitics. So you have to find a sweet spot for optimizing these transistors for high frequency applications.
But you rely on the fringing field of the gate to modulate this.
Yes. You need to find a balance. But it's not so important to use these fringing fields. You can also ignore the fringing fields, and by pulling this part of the conduction band down, you also pull down the conduction band here. But the gate control is not so bad in this, not so good in this case then. Let me use the last 10 seconds of my presentation for the time I have to give you a very short outlook of about the benchmark circuit design studies we have done so far. You have already seen this picture. The most important point is here shown on the right-hand side. We see the experimental data and the predictions by our model, and we see a good agreement between experiment and simulation. On this slide, you see some simulation results for a very simple PA power amplifier, where we have only one single transistor, some matching networks, and a stabilization network. And in this transistor, we change the number of metallic tubes we have in the channel. The impact of the metallic tubes on the output characteristic is shown here. So you lose the saturation of the current if you increase the metallic tube fraction in the channel. And here we see that if you increase the metallic tube fraction, you decrease the output power you can get, because the intrinsic voltage gain goes down. On the last example, I want to show you a study of a ring oscillator built up in a current mode logic. So we choose a differential architecture for our CML building block. We put, I think, 7 stages together. And here we see the oscillation of the output voltage over time for different metallic tube fractions. For 0.7 and 1.5%. And you see that the amplitude for 0% is relatively high. If you increase now a little bit the metallic tubes, the amplitude goes down and gets smaller and smaller. And we only get oscillation for a metallic tube fraction less than 2%. So what we see here is that the ring oscillator is much more sensitive to the metallic tube fraction than the power amplifier. Finally, on this slide, my last slide, I will summarize my presentation in a few words. So, we know that CNTs have excellent, unique, intrinsic electrical properties, and we want to use them for high-frequency applications, which provides very low distortion. The problem we are faced with right now is the high number of metallic tubes. We can see it here in a multi-tube transfer characteristic, but we are working on this to get rid of these metallic tubes, and we are following 2 different approaches. We are trying to get rid of the metallic tubes in a CVD-based process and in a DEP-based process, because we do not know which technology will give us the best results. And I have shown you that a compact model for high-frequency applications is available. It captures the characteristics for an existing technology, but you can also make some projections. What happens if we reduce, for example, the number of metallic tubes? And CKM is available, and maybe in a few months, in a few weeks, also available at NanoHub Needs. Maybe. Thanks a lot.
Hey, we have time for a few questions. There's one in the back room.
You briefly talked about the approach to get rid of the metallic
tubes.
Like, what kind of approach are you planning to do?
Now, currently, we are focusing on to find a better catalyst for the CVD-based process. So we are playing with the metal particles we are using as a catalyst. And in the DEP process, we are working on to get very smooth sorting methods, which delivers us very long tubes, only semiconducting tubes.
Okay. So I read some paper about this high voltage breakdown.
Yes. We have tried this to apply a very high drain source voltage while switching off the semiconducting tubes. Sometimes it's working, but it's really difficult because you have seen we have a more like a chaotic network. In this case, it's very difficult. And the other point is if you're interested in high frequency applications. And if you burn a CNT, a metallic CNT, you only burn 2 nanometers from the metallic CNT. And then you have the rest of the CNT in the channel. And you still have the parasitic capacitances due to these parts of the metallic CNTs which are within the channel. That's why burning is not an option for us.
So did you consider the parasitic capacitances between different CNT tubes?
Yes, it's true. If the CNTs are coming very closely together, they are interacting with each other. But in these technologies, we have a tube density of around 10 to 50 tubes per micrometer. So the distance between the CNTs is very long. So they are not interacting with each other.
So you talked about the impact of metallic CNTs and how they degrade your gain.
Yes.
So let's say you solve that problem.
Yes.
You still have tubes of different diameters that have slightly
yes.
different.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Is that something you can? So that red branch in your bottom right figure, that problem splits into multiple. Is
the
that
good,
likely to be a limiting factor and get simulated?
The good message is no, it's not a limiting factor because we need 1,000, 3,000 tubes in the channel. And all of them will have a different property, a different quality. But the mean value is very closely related to the technology you have. So if you have a technology which is working, which is well established, you have different tubes, but you will always have the same mean value. Understand what I want to say? So the statistics is playing with us. Okay? It helps that we need so many tubes. You always have the same mean value.
Well, I guess for a digital technology, this would be a real issue. But for an
yes, 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 it's true. If you are talking about digital applications where you want to use only one single tube, and you want to build a processor out of it with 3 billion transistors, and each tube have a different chiality, it will have a different threshold voltage. And now, the difficulty is to build a circuit out of it if you have different threshold voltages, digital applications, it's impossible. But for analog applications, it's okay. We have analyzed this. It's not an issue.
I have two questions.
Yes?
So for the current status that you have the mixture of metallic and the semiconducting tubes, have you benchmarked with graphene transistors? Because the on ratio of 3, graphene can achieve as well. And IBM has done a lot of graphene.
Yes, yes, yes. Now they stopped all the graphene work because they found out that graphene cannot be used for analog high frequency applications.
Also the voltage gain and
the voltage gain, and it's really, really difficult to get a better voltage gain for graphene. In this case, it's only due to the metallic tubes, and we are sure that in 1 or 2 years, we have found a method which works and which delivers us only semiconducting tubes. And the next point is with caffeine, the missing band gap. It's closely related to the intrinsic voltage gain, yes.
So I guess then I add a comment. So for the separation of the metallic and the semiconducting tubes, I think Northwestern has done it to 99.something%. So if you use that as a starting material.
We already have very good samples with a 99.9% clean material. But these tubes are too short. We are restricted to a channel length of 800 nanometer due to the lithography we have. And these tubes are much shorter. So then if you use, and we have used many different commercial ones, we get a chain of CNTs. So we get a thin film transistor and not a real transistor.
The last question is, once you get the semiconducting tubes, is this the final device structure you want to use without gating the source drain extensive region?
Yes. Yes.
Then
it's working.
Resistance is always in place.
No, it's not an issue. These space regions, which are not directly on top of a gate, does not contribute so much to the overall general resistance. So the Schottky barrier here directly at the contact has a much higher resistance than these spacer regions here.
So what is your ultimate goal for your circuit performance? What frequency range are you targeting?
We have found out in simulations that for the technology we have, for the 800 nanometer channel lengths, 30 gigahertz, 40 gigahertz would be achievable if you can get rid of the metallic cubes. So this is what we want to do for the channel lengths we have. And if you think about mobile communications are working at 2 gigahertz. So if you have a transistor with a peak transect frequency of 10, 20 gigahertz, it's sufficient to build applications at 2 gigahertz. This is what we want to do. And the next step is to shrink the channel length, but for this we need other equipment.
Okay, maybe one more question, and then we'll take this one, but Martin will be here after the talk, so we'll take one more question, and then we'll
break. In one of your slides, you said you showed the channel length dependence of the contact resistance.
Yes. So no, not channel length. It's the embedding length.
Okay, so that's not the channel. Okay. So it's going from, say, 5 kilo per cube to, say, 25 kilo per cube, right?
Hmm.
That is like for individual cube or is it for the whole configuration?
No, no, it's for an individual cube.
So you extract that from the full device.
Yeah, this is data from Franklin. So we did not make these experiments. I only used the data. It's shown here. This data is coming from Franklin, from IBM directly.
Does anyone in the audience know who Franklin is? No, he did his PhD thesis here in Berk, right? Aaron Franklin.
He took TLM structure and extracted the contact resistance for the different materials you have.
But it's not for single tube.
It's a single tube.
Okay, maybe we should let some people probably get the class. Thank you for a wonderful talk.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.